Lord for his goodness. Almost sounds in this version like a plea. Oh, that men would give thanks. Why don't people thank God? And as God looks over mankind, I think he sees very little gratitude for all that he has done and given. People are selective with that gratitude, I think. And, oh, that men would give thanks to him for his wonderful works to the children of men. God does so many things. He's done so much, even with the creation, and so much to give thanks for with that. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about creation and what it means with our relationship with God. And here at Thanksgiving time, now we give thanks all the time, hopefully, but at this time that many of you will be consuming certain amounts of food with Thanksgiving. This is about almost a follow-up message to the sermon I gave a couple of weeks ago on creation and our relationship with the Creator. You see the things that God has done, the things that God had provided for us, and we become thankful for it. I want to give this based upon one of the most powerful scriptures in the New Testament, Luke chapter 17. And it's powerful because it does indeed, or should indeed, cause us to think, to meditate on who we are and what we do and how we respond to God. Luke chapter 17 and verse 12 in the International Standard Version says, as Jesus was going into a village, 10 lepers met him. Now, you just think about the circumstance here that he's walking into this village, and here are 10 men who have literally their flesh falling off their bones. Some of them, probably their fingers had dropped off, because that's literally the type of thing that leprosy does. I mean, these 10 wretched individuals who had no hope, and seeing themselves and recognizing who they were, they approached Christ, as it says. They stood at a distance because lepers did not associate with the clean. It's kind of like if you know about the Ebola situation. You got to be isolated. You got to be separate because it's contagious. And they shouted, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And so it may be like from here to the back of the room, you know, just, Jesus, have mercy on us. And he could see what was going on from a distance even. And when Jesus saw them, he told them, go and show yourselves to the priests. They're like, why not? You know, we've been there already, and I don't know what he thinks he's doing, but we'll go. And so they started walking towards the synagogue. And it says that while they were on the way, they were made clean. And you can imagine these 10 pathetic souls walking to the synagogue and saying, well, can't lose anything. And then one of them looks over at Isaiah or whatever the name might have been. And he sees, your complexion's cleared up. And maybe another looked down at his hand and, my fingers have grown back. And they began looking at each other in shock and surprise and wonderment at the fact that they were lepers, the outcasts of society, and now they're healed. And this is what I think takes us all back, and I know we've all wondered about this. When it says in verse 15, but one of them, when he saw that they had been healed, came back and praised God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And this was a Samaritan, indicating the others were Jewish. Neither here nor there in one sense, but you'd think that they would have been more thankful to the Creator for having been healed. Only one thanked them. Now, haven't you wondered what happened to the other 9? Jesus did. I think even Jesus was shocked at this. When he says verse 17, he asks the man, 10 men were made clean, weren't they? I know you walked around the corner there and I didn't see you, and you're the only one that came back. And I asked God to heal all 10 of them. Weren't they all healed? Yeah. And Christ, almost in bewilderment, says, where are the other 9? Can you believe it? Ever done something nice for somebody and you would expect to just at least thank you? And you didn't get it? You kind of, what's going on? Verse 18, except for this foreigner, were any of them found to return and give praise to God? Verse 19, and he told the man, get up and go home. Your faith has made you well. Now, he had been healed. It wasn't as though he was being healed again. But I think Christ was referring to his state of mind, to maybe spiritually, that he was healed, he had faith, had went that extra mile in thanking God. Why would anyone not thank God for such a miraculous healing? I think some of you wondered about my title, 9 Reasons Why People Are Ungrateful, instead of 7 or 12 or 3 or some of those magical numbers. Because 9 people didn't come back out of 10 to thank God. Why? Now, I don't know. We can't read their minds, but you begin to ponder about why people are ungrateful when indeed they should be. So I want to look into the scripture a bit to see why people are ungrateful. And it's a good time to examine ourselves and see that we're thankful to God at all times, under all circumstances. And if we're not, why not? So let's talk about 9 reasons why people are ungrateful. Guy number 1 that didn't thank God, maybe he was ungrateful because he forgot. Sometimes we forget to be thankful. Now, you think we wouldn't forget to be thankful about like leprosy or some great thing that happens. Maybe guy number 1 says, well, I was going to thank Jesus, but, you know, I got so excited and I was showing everybody my new body and, you know, my fingers had grown back and all that type of thing. I just got so excited, I just forgot. Do we forget to thank God for what he has done? Do we forget to thank one another? Somebody gave me that. I'd seen it before, but Mrs. Hoyer up there in northern Arizona today gave me this. It said, what if you woke up today with only what you thanked God for yesterday? If you woke up today with only what you thanked God for yesterday, I think we'd have probably a much thinner wardrobe and even worse cars or, you know, whatever. Why do we forget? Psalm chapter 103, I've at different sermons gone through chapter 103 as the sermon because it tells us all of the things we need to be thankful for, but we're told in Psalm chapter 103 verse 2, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all of his benefits. It says, don't forget the benefits God gives you. Don't forget the blessings. And so it's a command. It's like that plea from God. Oh, that men would give thanks. Don't forget me. Psalm chapter 106, you read through and it mentions this a number of times, but Psalm chapter 106, verse 13, it says, but Israel quickly forgot what he had done and acted without waiting for his advice. Quickly forgot. Do we quickly forget the blessings, the benefits, the wonderful things that God has given to us, that others have done for us? It says, verse 14, they were filled with craving in the desert and put God to the test. They were too interested in their own desires to thank God for his blessings, too wrapped up in themselves, and forgot. They forgot that God didn't allow the Egyptians to slaughter them on the sea, but that he opened up the Red Sea and they walked through. And we look at that and don't we say, how could they forget when they started complaining about God and they weren't given enough or whatever? But they forgot so quickly. And again, this whole chapter, it mentions a number of times about how they forgot. God says, don't forget. Don't forget to thank God for the blessings. Don't forget to thank people too, because that's part of being thankful and having gratitude. You know, a mother will say, did you remember to thank Grandpa for that gift? Oops. Well, you better go do that right now. You know, go write a card or give them a call, or, you know, because a mother wants and a father wants their kids to be thankful. Well, our Father wants us to be thankful, and don't forget. Do we remember to thank God? Do we remember to thank people for what they do? Now, guy number two, who was healed and didn't come back to thank Jesus, maybe he was afraid that he would be obligated to do something if he went back and showed appreciation for it. He was healed. Maybe he was thinking, if I go back and thank him, then maybe he'll think that I owe him something. So I'll just sneak off, and that way I won't be obligated to do anything for somebody else. With gifts and with blessings, God really does expect us to treat others the same, to give to them. Romans chapter 1 and verse 21, it's a primary scripture from my last sermon, talking about the creation and about the things that God has made and the things that God has created. But Romans 1, 21 says, because although they knew God, and so guy number two here who said, okay, well, Jesus is coming into town and he has a connection with God, and so I'm going to ask him for healing. And so they knew God. It says, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God. And even when guy number two was thanked, he wasn't glorifying God with thanksgiving. Nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And so if we, as I said last time, people reject the Creator, because if they realize God is a Creator, that means that he's superior to them and he can tell us what to do. And people don't want to be told what to do, and they especially don't want God to tell them what to do, so they don't glorify him as God. They're not thankful. Romans 1:28 said they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, and so guy number two slinked away and said, glad I got healed, but I don't want to be obligated to this man. I don't want to have to do anything for him or anybody else. Paul Stanley. Who knows Paul Stanley? He's a KISS guitarist, so anyway. But even people who are in the rock and roll world sometimes come across life and see the wisdom in certain things. Paul Stanley, again, being the KISS, they're those guys that had the funny faces and stuck their tongues out and all that, but made a whole lot of money. Well, because he made a whole lot of money and things were good for him, you know, as a rock artist. He said, whenever anybody comes to me with a way that I can give something back, you know, I don't know how filthy rich he is, but, you know, he said, whenever anybody comes to me with a way I can give something back, it would be ungrateful at this point in my life not to say yes. You know, even he recognized that when something is given to us, we really have an obligation to others to give to them. We owe at minimum an appreciation to people, and certainly homage to God. Matthew chapter 18, Christ drives this other powerful scripture here home, this story. And it's one that I think we all wonder about too and say, how can this be? But Matthew chapter 18, verse 23 says, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And so he went to all these people that owed him money, and he found this one guy that owed him a lot of money. And he said, you're going to be in prison the rest of your life until your relatives pay this debt off. And the guy said, oh, please, don't do that to me. He said, let me go. Please forgive my debt. Don't throw me in jail. And verse 27, and the master of that servant was moved with compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. Now you think if you, for some reason, maybe you had committed manslaughter or something and you didn't really mean to, but you're going to get thrown in jail and you had a debt, and the judge said, okay, I'll let you out of jail and I'll erase the debt. You'd be extremely thankful, I would hope. If not, there'd be something wrong with you. There was something wrong with this guy. Because it says in verse 28, that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants that owed him 100 denarii, a much smaller amount, a fraction of the amount he had just been forgiven for. And he took him by the throat. It's kind of like Homer does with Bart, you know, and saying, pay me what you owe. Pay me what you owe. He'd just been forgiven this tremendous amount. And he would not. Well, and the guy said, he fell down on his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me and I'll pay you everything. And the guy wouldn't listen to him. He went out and threw him in prison until he should pay the debt. And then the king that had released this guy from the debt came back to him and said, what kind of a scum are you? I forgave you all this and you wouldn't even forgive this guy just a fraction of the amount? What's wrong with you, man? So the guy in jail. Verse 33 summarizes it. It said, should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant just as I had pity on you? When God forgives us so much, we not thank God for that. Thank God for his mercy. Thank God for forgiving our sin. And then somebody comes up to us and does something. Well, I can't forgive you. We're not really thankful to God unless we are willing to take that and put it to use and thank somebody else or forgive somebody else. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15. Hebrews 13, 15. No, we're not earning salvation with any of this, but it's an expected response. I mean, even a KISS guitarist has the understanding to realize that when you've been blessed, you kind of owe other people a blessing also. A small portion of what you've been given. Hebrews 13, verse 15 says, therefore, by him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. It's that attitude of thanksgiving, continually praising God, looking for those positive things that he does and making the best out of things, just thanking and praising him. But verse 16 says, but. It was not just a period there, but there's a, okay, now there's a contingency with this. It says, but do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. God gives to you, you better share with others. There is an obligation. So guy number two apparently didn't want to have the obligation, and so he was unthankful. How about guy number three? Number three of nine. Maybe it was too easy for him. Maybe he didn't have to do anything for what he got, and so he wasn't thankful for it. The only thing he had to do was just walk over to the priest, and on his way he was healed, and chances are he didn't even finish his job going over to the priest. He might have said, well, that was easy. I guess I should have asked that a long time ago. You know, if I see that guy again, I'm going to ask him for some money because this guy's an easy mark. So what else can I get out of him? Some of you listen to Dennis Prager on the radio. And Dennis Prager says, as you get older and wiser, you realize that when people are given anything without having to earn it, they become ungrateful and lazy. And that's what you find in society quite a bit today, as people on the dole, they're out there, you know, getting, you know, everything given to them, and they don't have to work for it. And it's not that when you don't have to, you do need something. That's biblical too. But when you can earn a living, and when you can do things for yourself and don't, they become ungrateful and lazy. They also become less happy. Now, it's not that we have to earn everything we get. We don't. But when things come too often and too easy, then oftentimes we become unthankful. That's why it's good to have your kids work for things and to have to not just be given everything, but teach them the work ethic. Guy number four. Maybe guy number four didn't go back to thank Jesus because he didn't like the man, like a lot of other Jews didn't. A lot of other people didn't like the man because of who he was. They liked what he did. And maybe number four said, I wish I could have been healed some other way. It was humiliating for me to have to ask this guy that we don't even like. And you would ultimately end up killing. Sometimes we don't like the giver. And so we figure, I'm not under obligation to thank this person. I don't even like him or her. Matthew chapter 12, there was a prevalent attitude at that time that destroyed thanksgiving. It's because they didn't like the messenger. They didn't like the giver. Matthew 12 and verse 10, these Pharisees beheld there was a man who had a withered hand, and they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him? And the story goes in verse 13, and he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and it was restored whole as the other. There's a gentleman up in northern Arizona that he was having this problem where your hand gets constricted. Some of you have had that. What is it called? Not carpal tunnel. It constricts the hands and makes them. Anyway, whatever it is, it was pretty bad. Well, he went to California and he had it done with his other one, but this hand was like this and he couldn't. And he had this operation and it's cool. And you know, everybody in northern Arizona, he came back and said, "That's great. Man, I'm glad," you know, and he's, you know, shaking hands and he said, look, I can move my hand again. And everybody's really thankful for him. Well, here's this guy who had a bad hand and Jesus had it healed. And their response was the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. They weren't thankful that this guy now had a use of his hands. Because they didn't like the giver. They didn't like Jesus. Now, sometimes we end up not liking somebody, so we think we don't owe them gratitude. Well, we do. Romans chapter 12 and verse 14. Romans 12 and verse 14. It says, bless those who persecute you. You're not going to like somebody that persecutes you, right? I mean, why would you like somebody that's doing nasty things to you? But it still says bless them. And if they do something that you can learn from, you can grow from, be thankful for it. And maybe even just thanking God for the opportunity. It says live in harmony with one another. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everybody. Anybody familiar with a guy by the name of Khalil Gibran? Do you know who is he? I don't know. I should have looked it up on my smartphone, but I didn't. Who is he? A philosopher. Okay, that's good enough. He's had good philosophy here. I should have looked it up. I did look up the quote, though. This is a very interesting quote. I'm going to read it twice because it's, I think, pretty impactful. He says, "I have learned silence from the talkative." You know, sometimes you're in a conversation with somebody and they're just always going. You think, okay, I don't want to do that to somebody else. You know, so I've learned silence from the talkative. Toleration from the intolerant. You see somebody that's intolerant and you say, oh, I don't want to be like that. And so you learn from it, right? Isn't that what life is about? We see things and we grow from it. He says, and I've learned kindness from the unkind. You know, when you've had a boss that treats you poorly. And you say, well, if I'm ever boss, I don't want to treat my employees that way, right? Okay, so you learn from the boss. But you didn't like what the boss was doing, or even like him for that matter. He says, yet strange, I'm ungrateful to those teachers. As because he didn't like what they did and how they were, but yet he learned from it and it changed his life for the better, you would assume, from what he's saying here. But he said, but we're ungrateful to them because we don't like them. We don't like something about them. But we can be thankful for all things. We're told to be thankful during trials and thankful during tests. I think this is one way we can do that, is say, well, God, thank you for the opportunity to learn. And thank you that I'm not going to be that way because of what I learned from them. You can be thankful even in bad situations. Just because we don't like the giver doesn't mean we shouldn't be thankful. Now, what about guy number five? Well, maybe guy number five just thought, you know, the leprosy thing was good, but couldn't he have done something else? Wasn't as good or as much as expected. Ever do that? Somebody does something for you and you say, yeah, but it was this, but not that. Sure, he took away my leprosy, but man, I got this gout. Oh man, I'm limping around. Why didn't he heal my gout too? I'm not going to thank him. He didn't do as much as I wanted. It's a reality, isn't it? Israel was given daily manna. Can you imagine not having to go to Safeway or put things on your fries thing so we can get our points? You don't have to go shopping. Cool. Okay. Food every day. But no. Right? They wanted more. It wasn't enough. They wanted quail. They wanted leeks and onions and garlics and all these things. It wasn't enough. It wasn't as much as we wanted. It wasn't how we wanted it. And so they were literally unthankful. Greed is a sin that causes people to be unthankful for things that God has blessed us with. We only think about the things we don't have rather than the things we do. I would really enjoy a 2015 Lexus. I would. But I feel very blessed to have a 2003 Honda Civic with 200,000 miles on it that has been extremely easy to operate and cheap. I'm really thankful for that thing. Could I get something else? Could I want something else? Eventually I will, yeah. But be thankful for what you've got and don't always be demanding more. You know, he only gave me $100 and I needed $300. Why was he so cheap? Instead of being thankful for the $100 you got, right? sometimes the way we are. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to having Alexis, by the way. Chances are I won't, but Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5 says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you." Now, God is giving us what we need. He's providing us with the subsistence, especially spiritually. He gives that to us daily, the manna that's given to us daily. And it's something to be excessively thankful for. And to be content with what we have, not with some of the things we don't have. The sixth guy, maybe he was just too wrapped up in himself. It was all about him. 2 Chronicles 32 and verse 24, there's a scripture that literally is saying that about this guy who is unthankful even though he had this given to him. That's why, it's because it was all about him. 2 Chronicles 32 and verse 24, today's English version says, "About this time, King Hezekiah became sick and he almost died. He prayed and the Lord gave him a sign that he would recover." Cool, how thankful would you be? Again, same thing with the lepers. Well, you're going to live, you know, you're going to be healed. Great, God, thank you so much. Nope. Verse 25, "But Hezekiah was too proud to show gratitude for what the Lord had done for him." It really ticks God off when that happens. You know how many times he says, "Give praises to God. Oh, that men would praise their God." And it said, "And Judah and Jerusalem suffered for it." You know, when we're not thankful, God is not happy. He wants us to have that attitude of thankfulness. But what about guy number seven that didn't come back to thank Jesus because he was healed? It might have been that it just never crossed his mind because nobody ever taught him better. Sometimes people are ungrateful because they're raised in a family that doesn't teach this valuable trait, this trait of character of being thankful. Many of you have heard of Zig Ziglar, a motivational speaker. Was anybody here the other several years ago when we went to see him? Yeah, we did one of those motivational things, and Zig was there. And you know, I don't know how old he was at that time, but you know, he was down there on his knees and he's running around, jumping around. I mean, he's like over the top, but extremely enthusiastic about life. And it's not a show, or wasn't a show. I guess he died on a bicycle in Salt Lake a few years ago, but. Anyway, a friend of his was writing about that. This is on beliefnet.com under inspirational stories. But he was writing about Zig Ziglar, and he was talking to a friend of Zig Ziglar's. This guy that's writing it used to work for Mr. Ziglar on his tours. But he was asking his friend about Zig, and he says, "Guy's completely genuine. I've never seen him down. Hardly what you'd call normal." And this guy writing the article says, "So what is Zig's secret?" Now the guy said, "I think it comes down to feeling grateful." Never met a guy more grateful than Zig, period. And the author goes on to say, you'd think that anyone so grateful would have had it good. A lot to be thankful for. It's just, you know, you're handed a silver spoon, you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and everything's good, right? So, of course, I'll be thankful. Does everything have to be good for us to know and to learn to be thankful? Well, he talks about Zig Ziglar. He said Zig started out poor, dirt poor. His father died when he was 6, leaving his mother to raise 11 children alone. Now, 2 were plenty for me, and I had my wife, but raise 11 children alone. The family was virtually penniless. Despite their poverty, Mrs. Ziegler instilled a strong work ethic in her children and raised them to believe that both she and God loved them. She also instructed her children to practice saying please and thank you. You know how mothers, how you do sometime, you do something for your kid, and you sit there and you look at him and say, "You're welcome." Oh, sorry, thank you. Those lessons stuck. Her formula of work and love and faith made their difficult lives easier. Now, they had difficult lives, but this attitude caused things to be easier. Gratitude made their lives enjoyable. Once, Zig told me, he says, "When we neglect to require our children to say thank you when someone gives them a gift or does something for them, we raise ungrateful children who are highly unlikely to be content. Without gratitude, happiness is rare. With gratitude, the odds for happiness go up dramatically." I'll read something else here in a little bit too. The author here goes on to say, Zig created the popular phrase, "Have an attitude of gratitude." I didn't verify whether he's the one that coined that phrase, but we all hear it, we've heard it, have an attitude of gratitude. According to Zig, the more you recognize and express gratitude for the things you have, the more things you will have to express gratitude for. You start making a list of the things that you're thankful for, just a couple of things a day, and then as you look at your lists and you focus on that positive, the negative doesn't tend to show up quite so much. We talked about the sins of the fathers in several sermons in the series recently. And if you weren't taught to be thankful as a child, it's something you need to overcome, the sins of those parents, and to be thankful. A couple of years ago, and my grandson must have been 6 at the time, and I took him to dinner, and we ate in this restaurant, and we were on our way out the door, and Blake goes running off. I said, "Blake, get over here. What's the matter with you?" Well, he ran over to the waiter, who was at the cash register, and he was thanking him for waiting on us. Oops, sorry. Good boy, Blake. Good boy. Nice to see good parenting. Okay, now the 8th guy, why didn't he go back and thank Jesus? And we're presuming here, but I think these are reasons why people in general aren't thankful. Is this guy felt unworthy to have been given something, for somebody to do something for him, to somebody to show appreciation or whatever. And he maybe said, "I don't deserve this. I know I asked for it, but I didn't think I'd get it. You know, and I really don't deserve it. Why don't you just leave me alone? I don't deserve this." I think most of us feel undeserving, and better than I deserve, right? And I never ask God to give me what I deserve. I don't want what I deserve. But on the other hand, God gives us things because he loves us. He cares for us. And people do things for us, and people compliment us or whatever because they mean it. People give us responsibilities because they feel you can do the job. Some people, again, because of how they were raised and their background and history, thought they never would amount to anything, and maybe their parents told them, "You won't ever amount to anything, you're no good." And so they become They feel undeserving, and so when somebody does something for them, they don't know how to take it. You don't want to thank somebody because you're elevating me above what I should be. And again, we don't get vain about our lives. We don't get to thinking we deserve things all the time. But on the other hand, to be ungrateful when someone does something for us and when God gives us forgiveness, we need to take it and accept it. It's a blessing when someone trusts us, when someone gives us something. So learn to accept gifts, compliments, blessings with grace and not with vanity. Number 9. Sometimes we don't see the positive in a trial or the positive in a blessing. Number 9, the guy might have said, I had it rough growing up, you know, with the leprosy and all coming on a little later in life. I just had a bad thing handed to me. Bad deck. Couldn't win. Nothing went right for me. Why should I thank God for healing me of something I never should have had in the first place? God really loved me. I wouldn't have had this trial. I wouldn't have had this problem. So I'm not going to thank him for that. He shouldn't have cursed me with leprosy in the first place. Now I can't even go back to my leper colony anymore because they won't let me in because I don't have leprosy. You know, I'm looking for something. You know. Acts chapter 16 and verse 25, won't turn there, but Paul and Silas are in jail. And they're in this deep dungeon. And it says, at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises to God, and the prisoners heard him. In jail? God, what am I in jail for? Come on, God, where are you? What's the matter with you? Why don't you get me free? Get me out of here. Now they're singing praises to God while they're in jail. Instead of complaining, they sang songs of praise and thanks. I want to, can you set that video up? I want to show a section of a video from a lady by the name of Alice Summer. She died this last February of 2014 at age 110. She was the world's oldest Holocaust survivor. And this is a lady, just YouTuber, name is Alice Hertz, H-E-R-Z, Summer. And you listen to her story, and at age 108, she is in this video, but she played the piano every day, 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon, age 108. And she had been in the concentration camp with her son. And she was a professional musician, and the Germans kept professional musicians alive because they liked the music. And having been in the concentration camp, here's what she came out with. So, can we play that?
I was brought up in a highly intellectual house.
In Prague.
Yeah.
In Czech.
Franz Kafka was a good friend of our family.
Is that right?
The whole Jewish people from the whole world came because Kafka to me and wanted to listen about Kafka. He was a very well-known writer, you know.
Of course, Franz Kafka. Everybody knows this. And he was a friend of your family. Why is it that you are so optimistic?
Because the world is beautiful. Nature is something extraordinary. Music is something phenomenal. People who have no relationship to music, they are poor, they don't know what is the most beautiful thing in life, in art.
is
better than painting and writing. Music brings you in another world.
Who are your favorite composers?
Favorite composer when I was young was Schumann.
Schumann.
But now, of course, Beethoven.
What is the secret of you feeling so good at your age? What is the secret? What can you tell people?
Optimism. And looking for the good. Life is beautiful. To be happy. To admire. To think. Thankful that we are living. Wherever you look is beauty.
And you see beauty everywhere. You see beauty everywhere. You see the beauty everywhere.
Everywhere. I know about the bad thing, but I look
to the good things.
The hardest time for me was when we had nothing to eat and he was hungry. When a mother has a child and the child is hungry, and she has nothing to give him. This is very difficult.
But you still were optimistic.
We were lying on the floor, of course, and I tried always to laugh or to because of the child.
Do you still practice the piano? Do you play the piano sometimes?
Every day.
Every day.
2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon.
Can you play for us some piano later?
So the 2 fingers are not quite in order, but I play. When you want something, you achieve it.
You don't take no for an answer. You just go for it. What advice do you have for young people that don't know, who are always so sad and depressed and feeling pessimistic? What advice do you have for them?
It is satisfaction to have done something well. The satisfaction, they are actors. Satisfaction is that people said she was excellent or whatever. No?
Yes, that's the most important part.
Satisfaction
for yourself.
For you as well.
Absolutely. It's always that. That I am happy for what I have done. What do you think are some of the secrets of life? Some of the other secrets besides optimistic? Is there anything else? Any other secret?
No.
That's it.
Optimistic.
Being positive.
Optimistic. Because life is beautiful. Beautiful.
Do you love nature? Do you love to go nature? What nature do you like to see?
Every nature. Trees and flowers.
Flowers, yeah.
Flowers. And a beautiful wife. And a child, when a baby, the first time when the baby starts to smile. A baby smiles because you make this or whatever. It smiles. You're a baby. It is good for us, for everybody, to have something, to know tomorrow will be this and this nice. Because you are nice. Mm-hmm. And there are nice people here. We can speak whatever we want. We can laugh. Life is beautiful. Humor is extraordinary. No?
Absolutely. I love when you laugh.
How would it be terrible our life without Beethoven, without Schubert, without the great Mozart, without all these wonderful people?
What do you think is different now than it was before? How has the world changed? And you've been here a long time. How has the world changed?
Technology made wonderful things. email, you write something, and in Alaska, in this moment where you write, he can read it. This is extraordinary. In internet, you can ask questions.
It's beautiful.
We are not aware how we are spoiled, actually. No?
Yes, absolutely.
I want to see only the good things in life. I want.
You've given the world so much. What has the world given you? What has the world given you, do you think?
Only my force to see only the good thing. I ignore the bad thing. Several times during the day, I am happy, I thank you. Life is beautiful.
I want to say what a pleasure it is to meet you, and that you are an inspiration for people all over the world. They watch your video and they hear your stories. Give you a big kiss. So now I give you a big kiss.
Yeah.
And we say goodbye to everybody. Let's all wave goodbye. Right there. It's right in the camera. There we are. Take care.
Very good.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Quite a lady, huh? I think we can all learn from people such as that who have that positive attitude in spite of, again, having been through the concentration camp. So it's not as though she didn't have any basis for focusing on negative. James 1 and verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into different trials, knowing the test of your faith produces patience." And so there are good things that come even out of the bad. And when she talks more about her concentration camp experiences, she talks about the benefits that she got even having been through that. I want to conclude here with a quote from, it's from the dailygood.org. It's an article called "The Neuroscience of Why Gratitude Makes Us Healthier." You can see this lady in one of the videos I watched. She talked more about gratitude itself, but why gratitude makes us healthier. The article says, negative attitudes are bad for you. There's a lady who lived to be 110, and I think her optimistic attitude was certainly played a part in her longevity. And gratitude, it turns out, makes you happier and healthier. If you invest in a way of seeing the world that is mean and frustrated, you're going to get a world that is, well, more mean and frustrating. But if you can find any authentic reason to give thanks, anything that's going right with the world in your life, and you put your attention there, statistics say you're going to be better off. And this whole article goes on to talk about certain studies that were done with test people, and they showed statistically what they're saying here, but I'll just give the results. It says, recent studies have concluded that the expression of gratitude can have profound and positive effects on your health, our moods, and even the survival of our marriages. When you look at the positive in spite of things, it's not always positive in every aspect. There's an old saying that if you've forgotten the language of gratitude, you'll never be on speaking terms with happiness. It turns out this isn't just a fluffy idea. Several studies have shown depression to be inversely correlated to gratitude. It seems the more grateful a person is, the less depressed they are. And says, sure, this world gives us plenty of reasons to despair. And they indeed are out there, aren't they? But when we get off the fast track to morbidity and cultivate instead the attitude of gratitude, things don't just look better, they actually are better. Thankfulness feels good, it's good for you, and it's a blessing for the people around you too. It's such a win-win that I'd say we have cause for gratitude. Guy number 10 knew he had cause for gratitude. He went back, he thanked God, he thanked Jesus Christ, and I'm sure he lived the rest of his life with this great attitude of gratitude. 9 people did not show thanks. 1 person did. Of those 10, which are you?